Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise. What am I made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? These are just a few of the questions that will be explored tonight by your host, naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant Dr. Rita Louise. Call in and talk to Dr. Rita and her thought-provoking guests. Get the help you need to move beyond any obstacle or challenges affecting your life right from the source. And now back to Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio, and thank you all for staying tuned for the second hour of the show. In this hour, we're going to be talking about politics and the occult. And, you know, it just makes you wonder how hand-in-hand they all go. So to share, talk to us this hour, we have Gary Lockman. And let me tell you a little bit about Gary and get him on the air. So born in 1955, Gary Lockman, and this is a very interesting bio, was a composer for the composer and performer with Blondie, Iggy Pop, and The No. Lockman is a former student of Gurdjieff Fourth Way, thank you, as well as a counterculture expert. He is the author of Turn Off Your Mind, The Mystic 60s, Dark Side of the Age of Aquarius, A Secret History of Consciousness and a Dark Muse, A History of the Occult. Politics and the Occult is his most recent release. Lockman lectures widely on esoteric underground and the 70s New York music scene, and he currently lives in London. So please welcome to Just Energy Radio, Gary Lockman. Hey, Gary. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Well, how do you go from, you know, being a composer, performer with Blondie and Iggy Pop to writing about secret politics and, you know, the mystic 60s and all that kind of stuff?
Well, it's a long, painful process, and I wouldn't advise anyone to follow it, having done it myself. No, I was pretty much interested in lots of different things the whole time I was a musician. Actually, I started out wanting to be a poet first, and thankfully the poems turned into songs somewhere about the mid-70s. But all throughout that time when I was a musician, I was reading everything I could get my hands on, and quite a bit of it was about the occult and the paranormal, esoterica, and so on. And I'd always wanted to write, or be a writer, actually be accurate about it. And after playing with Blondie and Iggy and having my own bands, I dropped out of it, went back to university, and then over a period of time just started writing about these things for some journals in the States. So it was something that was always there, but I had a previous career. So in a way, it's rather than being sort of a, you know, pop musician who later became a writer, I was a writer who was a pop musician for a while.
Well, that's a great
That's how I see it, at least.
Well, you know, most people, you know, that do my kind of work, you know, well, in my former life, I did this, you know, but that's a pretty exciting former life, you know, as opposed you know, doing office work.
Well, I had my share of, you know, day jobs. I mean, I managed a bookstore for quite some time, and I ran a video shop also. So I was in the real world. And it's, you should probably know, it's not all, you know, bed of roses students kind of work. You know, you do have to work quite a bit. And until you write, you know, your bestseller and that sort of thing. But until then, I'm slaving away all the time.
Like us all. So let's talk about your book, Politics and the Occult. You know, and in your book, you start your exploration of politics with the Rosicrucians. You know, and I'm assuming that the Rosicrucians were not the first political people or that used the occult, especially when you think about, like, the Greeks going to the Oracle of Delphi and stuff like that. So why did you decide to start with the Rosicrucians?
Well, if I covered, you know, the whole time, say from day one, it would have been a much bigger book. Yeah, which may happen. But I say in the book that indeed, you know, it's only recently in the so-called modern period that the link between the political world and, say, the world of religion or spirituality or supernatural or the occult, which all more or less kind of fall under the same sort of umbrella, that had been the case for most of history. You know, if you go back and look at the ancient Egyptian pharaohs and the emperors in China, you know, these were divinities. You know, these were divine people. And I say in the introduction, you know, there's this notion of the cosmic state where the soothsayers and, you know, seers of the court would read the signs wherever they found them, you know, in the sky or in, you know, natural phenomena or something like that. And then they would communicate to the emperor or the pharaoh or, you know, whoever was in charge, the state of things, and based on that, you know, what the gods wanted, what the gods intended, and so based on that, you know, decisions were made, and it's only fairly recently. And I start with the Rosicrucians because I'm trying to look at it more or less in the modern period, because, you know, what we understand when we say the word occult, which unfortunately is this kind of signifier for a lot of things that you know, seem rather shady and dubious, or it has this kind of X-file woo woo kind of character to it. But you know, for a very long time, it was a very respectable, you know, highly regarded discipline. Astrologers and other you know, readers of the secrets and so on. And again, it's only with the modern period that it's become this kind of what I call on the book, based on an occult historian named James Webb from the 1970s, he came up with this term, rejected knowledge. So it's, for us, starting from about the modern period with the rise of science, when reason and that which is measurable basically became the criteria for what was true. And occult means hidden. It's in the sense that something's occluded. You know, you can't see it directly. But it was just real nonetheless. But with the rise of science and the rise of measurement, being able to measure something, that becoming the criteria for something being true and real, all these hitherto occult sciences, they were considered sciences, became, you know, suddenly they weren't players anymore. Gradually, from that time on, through 1600s, 1700s, and on towards us, the occult fed into this kind of counterculture. You know, when we say the counterculture, we think of the 1960s, and but that was a particular, very visible expression of it, but something along those lines had existed before. So I start with the Rosicrucians because it's the beginning of the modern period, and they're also, well, I'm saying they, but it's uncertain whether there actually were any Rosicrucians. But for the sake of, you know, going on, I'll continue to refer to them as if they did exist. They were involved with something as being as the Protestant Reformation and all that. So it's a very clear connection between a cult or mystical group with, you know, mainstream politics. And one of the things I do in the book is I'm not really interested in secret societies. I mean, I'm interested in them, but I don't do that in the book, because many of the people have written about that already. I'm trying to focus on basically real history, but when were there different, you know, incursions, let's say, of occult thought into it. And it strikes me that with the Rosicrucians, they're at the beginning of the modern period, and also at this period when these occult sciences are starting to become, you know, recherché and something that, you know, is kind of shady and is no longer trustworthy and so on.
So we're talking about things like alchemy and,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that.
Alchemy, astrology, the whole sort of macrocosm, microcosm vision where man, human beings are somehow the universe in miniature, and we have this connection between, you know, the stars and the upper world and our own lives here. All that becomes very questionable at that time.
So, and is what you're saying is that the Rosicrucians were kind of during that same period of all the different Protestant groups forming, you know, like the Lutherans and stuff?
Yeah.
Like they were like a different sect? kind of...
Well, what had happened was that in the early 1600s, this sort of pamphlet appeared in a place called Cassel in Germany, and it announced the arrival of this brotherhood, of the Rosy Cross. And they were the harbingers of this new age. You know, we think of the new age as something that started, I don't know, sometime in the 80s or whatever. But, you know, people talking about the new age basically from day one. But they were the harbingers of this new age, and was going to be this new revelation in the sciences and in religion and in social life and so on. And it had to do, partly with, what we would call the hermetic sciences, alchemy, and this macrocosm, microcosm vision of things, as above, so below, but also with throwing over the Habsburgs, you know, the Habsburgs dynasty, that were these, you know, very severe Catholic rulers who controlled Europe, and they were considered decadent, the Pope was considered decadent, the Pope was considered the Antichrist, you know, the Vatican and the papacy were just considered, you know, the devil, basically, and there was a movement which Luther, you know, is the most prominent figure of for this kind of reformed belief, getting back to basics, a kind of fundamentalism, basically, and the people who were involved in what's, you know, known as the Rosicrucian hoax or this kind of ludibrium, which is a Latin term for a serious joke. They very much wanted to overthrow the control of the Habsburgs in order for this kind of new liberal progressive you know, vision of society and science and education and religion to emerge. And another reason why I start with the Rosicrucians is that they're an early example of a progressive kind of political occultism, because most books about it or most ideas about it are of this notion of the Nazis, the National Socialism, and its, you know, its involvement with the occult and the variety. There's a variety of very readable books about it, which mostly are based on fantasy. They're not based on any sort of verifiable fact, but they're great fun to read. And the picture is, you know, the general picture is that any sort of occultism in politics tends to be, you know, far right. And this is true, a great deal of it is. But what I try to do in the book is also show that there is a progressive, at times leftist kind of political occultism. So it's not, you know, something that's only happening on the right. And so the Rosicrucians were an example of this, because they wanted to have a more liberal, you know, more modern, basically, in our terms, kind of thing. And unfortunately, the Habsburgs basically, you know, crushed it. There's the Counter-Reformation and so on. But similar themes are carried through in history, and then the Freemasons get involved. Freemasonry is something that may have come out of this Rosicrucianism, because the whole idea
back to the Freemasons.
Okay,
hang on,
sure.
I have a Rosicrucian question.
Okay.
It was a fascinating little, like, barely one sentence, you know, one little paragraph, and I just, you know, got this little light bulb thing. So what you talk about Joachim, who prophesied the New Age, and you kind of talked about this teeny bit.
Joachim de Fiore, yeah.
Yeah, who prophesied a New Age of spiritual freedom in 1260. And, you know, and what occurred to me, you know, based on what his prophecy was, it sounded like what he was talking about is very, very similar to what people are talking about as coming in for 2012.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's, if you look at history, periodically there are these moments when the expectation of some radical change in the state of things is shared by many people. It's not uncommon. I mean, there was a book written 10 years ago called The Pursuit of the Millennium by a historian named Norman Cohen, and he basically traces this idea. So, yeah, I you're right. I mean, that's another thing that I do talk about in the book, this kind of sense of this expectation of some radical change happening, and how that plays into politics, say in the French Revolution or in other times like that. But yeah, no, absolutely. Well, this is something that the Rosicrucians picked up on, because Joachim de Fiore, these three ages of the church, there was the age of the Father, which was sort of law and, you know, so on, and the age of the Son. And then there was the age of the Holy Spirit, which was supposed to come, you know, in his, as he says, 1260. And he felt that the church itself had become, you know, an obstacle to that, because it was in the age
and
of the
so
Holy Spirit.
And so what were the characteristics of the age of the Spirit?
Well, it would have been a more immediate, direct participation of people, individuals, with, you know, with the Spirit, with God, with Christ. And they wouldn't need the medium of the church any longer. You wouldn't need the, basically, you wouldn't need the magicians to do it for you. You wouldn't need the priest to do the magic ritual that would, you know, because in many ways, I think Catholicism
is... How would
is,
they get is, all the money?
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, that, you know, as you know, that's one of the things that Luther complained about, you know, the whole idea that the priests were accepting payment to say prayers for, you know, relatives in hell or purgatory or whatever. And, you know, oh, I can fix it. I can fix it for you. So, but, I mean, in many ways, that strikes me as that Catholicism is much more pagan and magical than, say, Protestantism. It's... Protestantism is this kind of austere existential, you know, it's just you and God, and then Catholicism has this whole hierarchy of angels and, you know, saints and so on. It's really a polytheism. And this was something that was considered, you know, decadent in a way by the, you know, by the Protestants at the time. And, but, I mean, that theme of this kind of new age that Joachim de Fiori saw happening in 1260. That's something that repeats, you know, throughout this occult history. Let's call it.
It just makes me wonder, you know, what kind of feedback.
Well, the thing is,
after 1260 came and went, and nothing really changed.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, 16. There was another time. You know, at various different times. There, you know, well, the millennium itself, the first millennium. You know, it was a time when this was supposed to be the second coming, and there were many sects at the time who, you know, either committed mass suicide, like some have done in, you know, recent decades here, and so on. So it's not, I mean, many people who say don't go into the history of this sensibility, they hear about things like the New Age or 2012 or Quantum Convergence or whatever, and they seem to be, you know, something that's things that are unique and peculiar only to this time, but when you do a little homework and you look at history, you see it now, it's something that happens. Which isn't to say that the times in which these things appear, they don't suggest some sort of, you know, apocalyptic kind of thing, or, you know, we do live in you know, times of stress and change. I'm not saying, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's just that, to me, it's a kind of constant, at least in the West, This notion of a kind of end time, you know, wiping the slate clean and new beginning and all that, and that sensibility feeds both progressive and what you could call very traditional and conservative views. It's not something that's limited to. I mean, I tend to see it of, you know, as like a Jungian archetype or something like that. It's part of human psychology, you know, to want to have this kind of sort of a kind of, you know, spiritual white tornado. You know, if you remember the old ads, when I was a kid, there used to be some kind of cleanser, Ajax or Comet, you know, and the white tornado came in and cleaned your house and everything was spotless. So there's some sort of social white tornado supposed to happen at the apocalypse and pull, you know, all the detritus out, you know, the unwanted elements, and then there'd be the new age. And that sensibility feeds both, you know, progressive ideas and also, you know, very conservative, far-right ones.
I think there's just going to be a lot of people that are going to be irritated if something doesn't happen.
Well, no, I'm interested in 2013. That's what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I you know, I had an idea for doing a book on that, you know, like what do you do when the apocalypse doesn't arrive, you know, or the day after. But, I mean, you know, even in my own lifetime, you know, there was Kahutek in 1974. There was what was the other one, Hellbop. There was another comet in the early, say, mid-90s as well, you know, a variety of different things. But at the same time, isn't precisely what's happening today with the credit crunch and the global economic crisis, isn't that precisely what, you know, 2012ers would expect to be happening? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if many people who feel strongly about this are saying, well, look, here it is, it's starting, you know. I mean,
well,
it's the end of capitalism,
isn't
it?
you know, it's the dichotomy. You know, there's people that are going for the light, and then there's, you know, the people going with the greed that are creating these, you know, these crises are supposed to be, you know, helping people to recognize, you know, the choices that they have. I mean, you know, I mean, it's so complicated.
Well, I mean, if I think, well, this is precisely the kind of scenario in which something new can be injected into, you know, the project, you know, Western Civ. Whether it will be or not, who knows? That's the big one, right?
Well, like I said, I think it's going to be interesting. You know, people are like, well, what do you think is going to happen? It's like, well, you know, it could be this, it could be this, it could be nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
Well, the Olympics are supposed to happen here in London in 2012, so given the credit crunch and everything, if they actually pull it off, I think that would be something amazing at this point. They're so in debt in it now, so the budget's gone so over the top, so I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask you this question because I brought this up, you know, a couple of months ago. You know, I mean, the United States has this economic issue going on. You know, England, you know, Europe has this economic issue going on.
Oh,
so
yeah,
in your mind, from a political point of view, where's all the freaking money? I mean, other than, you know,
I don't know. I mean, it's, well, you know.
Ireland, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're going to print some more, they tell us here. So there'll soon be plenty out in the pipeline. Well, somebody's got it. I don't know. You know, I mean, you see on the news with I do hear about the whole controversy there about these bankers, you know, giving themselves these massive bonuses while the ship is sinking and so on. So there's not quite as much money here, but and they actually do seem to be a bit more sensitive to the issue, and so then that's not happening as much here as there. But where the money, I don't know. I don't know. You know, whoever has the money, you know.
I thought maybe you did. Kind of a Where's Waldo thing, you know?
Where's the money? That's good, actually.
Well, I mean, you know, somebody has to have it. Somewhere.
Yeah, logic
doesn't
logic
make any sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, a project for you to think on.
Yeah.
Okay. So earlier you started to mention that there might be a relationship between, like, the Rosicrucians and the Freemasons, because I think everybody's pretty familiar, you know, especially if you watch any, like, History Channel or Discovery Channel, who the Freemasons are, and, you know. But I never heard that commentary that the Freemasons might actually be some kind of an outcropping.
Well, I mean, the thing was there was with the Rosicrucians, there was you know, this announcement of this group, and then there were these Rosicrucian manifestos that were distributed in Germany, and proclaiming this new age and, you know, the new science and the new religion and so on and so on. And they also said, you know, please come and join us, you know, and if you want to, you know, take part in this glorious time, you know. And lots of people did want to do that, but Rosicrucians could not be found. You know, no one knew where you couldn't find them. And they had acquired this reputation and a name. They were being called the Invisibles. You know, you couldn't find them. But the whole idea, the Rosicrucian ideals, let's say, this kind of sort of social utopianism with, what later became just basically, free education. I mean, one of the Rosicrucian followers was a Bohemian fellow at the time, which is, you know, sort of the Czech Republic now, Comenius, and he's recognized by the UN, and there are several schools named after him, and he was this brilliant scholar and teacher, but he had developed this whole notion of universal education, everybody being educated, you know, whereas prior to that, you know, with the dominance of the church and the Habsburg monarchy, you know, most people, you know, no one, you know, who learned how to read or who learned anything about history, any of that sort of stuff. It was all, you know, just for the scholars.
Hey, Gary, we need to take a quick break.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Rita Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. We're talking to Gary Lachman about his book, Politics and the Occult, and we'll be back.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Go deep inside yourself and venture into the realm of the unconscious mind with my Meditating on the Kabbalah guided imagery audio CDs. Discover who you are and what you want in life. Meditating on the Kabbalah can help you to open, clear, and revitalize the energetic pathways of your subtle being. They will support you in your spiritual quest by helping you to access the profound insights and inner guidance you need as you work in alignment with your highest good. Let them help you to release negative thoughts and emotions and clear away any limitations that may be keeping you from experiencing your full potential. Walk down the path to health, healing, understanding, and enlightenment with Meditating on the Kabbalah. Order your copy today at www.soulhealer.com. That's right, that's www.soulhealer.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rita Louise, the host of Just Energy Radio. There's no greater blessing in the world than your good health. Science is now showing that simply eating a high-quality diet doesn't provide us with all the nutrition we need. Doctors recommend we supplement our diets with products derived from whole food concentrates. And one of the most complete and nutritious whole foods found on the earth are little microscopic plants called marine phytoplankton, which can be found in a product called Frequency. I've been taking Frequency every day for about 6 months now, and I feel more energized and full of life. If you're ready to make a difference in your health, I encourage you to try Frequency and see what it can do for you. To learn more about Frequency and other amazing whole food natural products direct from Mother Nature, please visit productsforthesoul.com.
Just Energy Radio wants to help you grow your business. Just Energy Radio has a growing global audience which can provide you with an unequaled opportunity to educate thousands of people about the products and services you have to offer. Through our targeted market, your ad is more likely to connect with like-minded individuals who will respond to your message. In addition, our archiving feature will allow your ad to be heard over and over again. Join the internet marketing revolution and take advantage of our low introductory prices. Visit JustEnergyRadio.com for more information.
Start the year off right by visiting livinggrocery.com. Experience the miracle of real nutrition as it helps you to lose weight and improve your overall health. Don't mess with pills or capsules. We provide the highest quality, all-natural, organic foods that come ready to eat. And best of all, it's delivered straight to your door. Visit livinggrocery.com now and experience your own amazing transformation.
Hi, I'm James Altayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Listen to Dr. Rita's Soul Healer Moment live each third Sunday night of the month on Feet to the Fire. www.feettofire.com for more information. And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and we're talking with Gary Lockman about his books, Politics and the Occult. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about the Freemasons.
Yeah, I was trying to get into them. And what I was going to say is that the ideals that were articulated in these Rosicrucian manifestos, they spread throughout most of sort of Western and Northern Europe. And many thinkers and philosophers and scholars and so on became very much enamored of this whole idea of this kind of new, free society and liberal education and so on and so on. And they spread these ideas. And what Freemasonry is a very, very strange thing because it's sort of its origins are, as they say, shrouded in mystery. What seems to have happened is that at some point, these actual masons, people who actually worked in stone, and they were called the Freemasons because they worked in a softer kind of stone. And on all the cathedrals and the royal buildings and all that, they're the ones who did the carvings. They did all the, sort of symbols and insignia and things like that. And given that they worked on cathedrals, on those Gothic cathedrals, the idea is that they became sort of gradually, privy to this, hidden, esoteric or spiritual or occult kind of knowledge teaching that many people believe are is incorporated into the Gothic cathedrals, is kind of alchemy in stone. And what seems to have happened is that suddenly all these noble people, the aristocracy, you know, very important people started to become really, really interested in what these Freemasons were doing. And it was exactly the same as if, you know, the Fortune 500, you know, suddenly became interested in what construction workers, you know, what were they all about? And they wanted to join them and all that. And what happened was that from being this kind of hands-on, real, actually masonry, it turned into what was called speculative masonry. And it became very interesting. It became focused on the whole idea of architecture and the idea of building, the idea of the stone and the symbols that were being carved into it. And that became this kind of club, you know, that different people joined. And while masonry in England more or less stayed rather conservative and kind of, you know, was pursuing these things, but it was trying to keep within, you know, the bounds of convention and expectations. On the continent, it took on a more radical character, mostly or initially because it became involved with this whole plot movement in England to put Bonnie Prince Charlie, to put the Stuarts back on the throne. And so the whole, again, here's another example of a mystical occult sort of society organization actually being involved in real life history. You know, it was out in the open about that. But the point is that on the continent, in France and in Germany, Freemasonry took on this association with radical politics. And people looking for the origins of the mystical ideas, they've seen them in this kind of handing down of the Rosicrucian ideals, how the Rosicrucians, you know, their notions as spelled out in the manifestos. It was this sort of teaching that the Masons were drawing on. Even though, having said that, Masonry, there's records of Masonry starting earlier, even earlier than the Rosicrucians, so it may not be, you know, it's not like the complete answer, but there does seem to be a connection to it. And again, that's a theme that the whole idea of these hidden, invisible, these invisible wise men, the Rosicrucians, this sort of, that theme is carried through in this kind of history of occult politics that I'm doing. It turns up in later years with someone like Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society, this notion of the hidden masters. And prior to that, in Freemasonry, there was a similar idea of these upper echelon Freemasons who were masked, who were unknown. Their identity was unknown, and it was unclear whether they were, you know, humans like you or I, or whether they were some sort of higher entity. I'm not arguing that there's some sort of actual physical kind of link, like, you know, so-and-so handed down the teaching to that so-and-so and so on, but more or less that the zeitgeist carried these ideas around. This medium of the spirit of the age sort of was the transmitter of these ideas. In real-life political terms, there's a great deal of talk about how, you know, the founding fathers were all Masons, and most of them were, but many on the English side were Masons as well. So at that time, many people were Masons, and it was actually not an unusual thing. The teachings were, there was esoteric masonry and all that. But along with that, there was this more general, again, idea of this kind of brotherhood of man, this kind of free, open society, something along the lines of the classical society at the many Masonic meetings, you know, the upper crust mixed with the, you know, lower class. At the same time, people join those things because you can make connections. I mean, nowadays it seems more or less like an old boys club where there's a lot of business deals take place under the Masonic roofs.
Really secret traditions? You know, I've gone to, you know, a couple of Masonic lodges or met people that were Masons, you know, and, you know, they don't tell you, like, what level they are or anything.
Yeah, but they
just seem like regular, dumb old people. They don't seem particularly mystical or
esoteric
or spiritual or anything.
Well, I mean, some people have said that there's, you know, there's a great deal of the Masonic rituals. I mean, many of the Masons, you know, contemporary Masons don't actually know what they're about. They're, which is true of, you know, many people go to Mass or something. They don't quite understand what, you know, the Mass is. It's just something, the ritual that they go through. They go to it. But, I mean, I don't know any Masons myself, and I'm not, you know, I think there are still parts of it that aren't let out. You know, that people aren't told. And again, that's another, that's something that goes back to ancient times, you know, in the ancient Greek mystery schools, Delphi and other places where, you know, annually there were these festivals, sort of mass initiations of people that would participate, in these group, you know, these mass rituals of entering into the Greek mysteries, and you were on threat of death, you know, you vowed never to reveal what the secrets, you know, were. No one actually knows, you know, no one, it's not, there's no, no one wrote it down as far as we know. So, I wouldn't be surprised if in Masonry today or, you know, some, branches of it, there are some, you know, rituals that, you know, they don't tell the public about. But my impression of it is, as I said, it's kind of, you know, it's like an old boys club where, you know, people, you know, a lot of business deals and things like that, and boosting of each other's careers goes on. And that would have been happening as well, say, in the early, late 18th century, when someone like Mozart was, you know, a Freemason. He would go to the meetings and, you know, he'd be meeting people and, you know, oh yes, you know, oh yes, this is a great composer, and, you know, oh well, you know, would you mind, you know, making a string quartet for my banquet next Tuesday or something, you know, along those lines. So, I mean, that sort of stuff happened, and it's not unusual that many people were Masons, because it was something that was, you know, quite popular. But again, the whole sensibility of it, this brotherhood of man and this kind of, you know, social equity, that indeed did get fed into the, you know, the American Revolution, the, you know, the War of Liberation, and then later the French Revolution. So rather than the idea of these kind of nefarious Freemasons, you know, hiding in the shadows, manipulating things to make these things happen, the whole the sensibility of Freemasonry fed into these major political events and had as, you know, much a share in them as, say, the economic factors or other kind of factors. And I mean, I think when you look at occultism's influence on politics in that way, it's more interesting than this idea of this kind of, you know, hidden cabal of secret, you know, secret societies manipulating things, and which is it's an exciting idea. It's a very romantic idea, and it's one that I enjoyed a great deal when I was younger. But the other strikes me as actually more interesting, because it's a more real, you know, sort of influence.
You know, but there's a lot of talk about these secret societies in our government, you know, and like the Illuminati whatever, you know, that, you know, the, you know, powers that be in the New World Order that they're trying to bring in.
The Bilderbergs and all that, yeah.
Yeah, those people.
It's Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I have to say, I mean, the whole conspiracy theory sort of sensibility is a real can of worms, and I think once you open it, it's, you know, it's kind of goodbye to anything else, because it's like, you know, it's like the single bullet theory, or, you know, who shot JFK, you know, I mean, you can get totally involved in it, and it's fascinating. I also think, again, that this notion of conspiracy idea, in a way, it's kind of a psychological projection. I mean, Jung, I'm working on a book on Jung now, so that's why he comes to mind. He's come to mind often. I was going to say in the late 50s, he wrote a book about flying saucers. And this was sort of in the heyday or the early heyday of, you know, UFO-dom. And what he said in the book basically is that whatever their physical reality, speaking as a psychologist, he believed that the round saucer shape was this kind of projection of the mandala, and the mandala is this circular shape that the psyche projects, and it's a kind of it's a symbol of wholeness. It's a symbol of kind of, you know, integrity and sort of integration. And at that time, this was, you know, the height of the Cold War, and, you know, there was the behind the Iron Curtain and U.S. and Russia facing off and all that. And he said, you know, the world is in this schizophrenic state, and it was projecting this image as if it was a dream of the flying saucer as a kind of, you know, crying out for wholeness. So reason I bring this up is I think similarly, the conspiracy consciousness that's been around for quite some time, I think that's kind of projection of our, I don't want to say need, because it makes it seem deficient, and I don't mean in that way, but our kind of search for meaning. There's something behind things. You know, there's something behind things. There's something that's controlling things and ordering things going on, because we've had science telling us for, you know, I don't know how long now, the whole 20th century, that it's absolutely meaningless. You know, there's nothing, you know. You know, 15 billion years ago, less than nothing exploded for no reason. And that's why you and I are having this telephone conversation, which is very satisfying to me. You know, the idea that behind things there is actually somebody is a bit more, you know, gratifying, because it's not emptiness that you're dealing with. You're dealing with some kind of agency. At the same time, I'm not denying that there probably are all these covert groups behind things. But as I say, it's a real can of worms, and I didn't want to do that in the book, because there are quite a few books about that already, you know, from different people. And I thought if I went in that direction, I'd be covering a lot of ground that, you know, had already been covered.
You know, I just feel like, you know, if there is some kind of a conspiracy going on, you know, covering up UFOs and JFKs, you know, one little piece just opens the door and validates this huge thing that it's like, oh my God, could you imagine, like, if that was all really real? I mean, it would kind of...
Well, you know, yeah, and what would happen if you did? And, you know, isn't that the theme of most of these TV shows and movies about this sort of thing? It's like somebody finds out, and yes, there is something, but, it, you know, that it is controlling things, and so it's going to control you as well in some way, you know. Who are you going to tell about it? And, you know, who's going to do something? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that, again, that seems to be a real theme these days, this whole notion of that, the uncertainty of everything. You know, it's you're unsure who you can trust, who is really who they are. I mean, I think that kind of thing even shows up on things, say, like social networking and Facebook. I mean, I look at the Facebook page, and, you know, it has that bit where it says, you know, what are you doing now? And as if you have to tell everybody what you're doing, in a way, and they have to verify it, that that's what you're doing. And it's this kind of reaching out for certainty, I feel. Either that, or it's like ants, you know, where they pass off chemical messages to each other in the ant hill all the time.
There is some music, which means we need to take another break. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. We're talking to Gary Lachman about his book, Politics and the Occult. And we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
Hey, it's Dr. Rita Louise. Don't forget to sign up for our free online newsletter at justenergyradio.com. It'll keep you informed of who's coming on the show each week. And don't forget, explore your possibilities every Friday night. Don't miss a single episode of Just Energy Radio. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Are you feeling stuck and unsure which way to turn on your path? Do you lack focus and direction in life? Do you feel something is missing? So what do you want? A better job? Your dream home? More money? Your ideal mate? Decora has practical tools to assist you. Schedule a session today to get clear about what you truly desire to deliberately create the life you want. For more information, visit ManifestingConsultant.com or call toll-free 1-800-813-3877.
Are you sensitive to energy? Want to explore the world beyond the five senses? Looking for a new career as an alternative health care practitioner? Then the Institute of Applied Energetics, Medical Intuition, and Energy Medicine Training Programs may be right for you. Our comprehensive curriculum provides students with a deep understanding of how to detect, evaluate, and transform the subtle body, as well as techniques for correcting energetic imbalances that may underscore a person's ability to experience radiant health. So if you are sensitive to energy, contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Visit www.appliedenergeticsinstitute.com and start your new career today.
Finally, there's a healing and ascension tool that delivers real results faster than you ever dreamed possible. Guaranteed. Feel your body release those lingering physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual blockages. Sense a profound awakening to your next level of intuition and oneness with your higher self. Discover Archangel Metatron's Healing and Ascension CDs at AtlantisHealthCenters.com. Visit AtlantisHealthCenters.com today.
Crossroads in your life and discover alternative solutions to your deepest concerns at SoulHealer.com. So whether it's a physical problem, an emotional issue, a question about work, or troubles in your relationships, naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise can help you. Bring peace, harmony, and health back into your life. Schedule a session today. Visit SoulHealer.com right away and live the life you've been dreaming of.
Now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise and we're talking to Gary Lockman about his book, Politics and the Occult. So we're kind of getting to the end of the show and I wanted to ask one last question. You know, are there still organizations, you know, like the Masons still exist, but, you know, we kind of talked about it's more of a social networking thing. But are there still organizations that delve into the exploration of the inner self like the Rosicrucians did or like, you know, people are led to believe the Freemasons did at one point in time?
Well, no, I think that sensibility has become, you know, part, in many ways, mainstream culture. I mean, the New Age. My book you mentioned earlier, Turn Off Your Mind, which is about the 1960s, and the occult craze of the 60s, and how, you know, people, the most famous people in the world, say in 1967, the Beatles and Rolling Stones, they were both into various forms of cultism or mysticism, Eastern mysticism, and all that sort of thing. And it's from that. You know, the crystal shops and the New Age shops and alternative health and yoga and, you know, the variety of things that are just, you know, basic. As they say here, you can find them on the high street, you know, on the main street. You know, they're really parts of, 21st century culture now. And then there's also, it's so available. I mean, that kind of thing. When I first became interested in the mid-late 70s, you know, it was there, but it wasn't called the New Age then, and it was this revival of interest in the occult and people like Aleister Crowley.
Oh, come on, you could get Be Here Now, and maybe.
Exactly. You know, no, but I mean, it wasn't branded in that way just yet, and, I think you can find when did it start. Well, I mean, it goes back. In Politics of the Occult, I talk about, you know, the beginning of the, what we would call the counterculture in a place called Monte Verita, the Mountain of Truth in Switzerland in the early 1900s, where it was an early nature cure, vegetarian free love, higher consciousness society there that, you know, many, many people at the time, well-known people like Rudolf Steiner and Jung and others at that time, you know, went to. So, I think now, I'm sure there are groups that try to maintain a kind of, you know, keep a low profile and keep themselves, you know, play their cards close to their chest, keep themselves, you know, secret in some ways. But at the same time, I think it's out there, and there's a whole subculture of it, which has its good side and its bad side. You know, the bad side perhaps is that, you know, some of it gets watered down and it's, you know, dumbed down and it's overpopularized and so on, and maybe it loses any value it had by being disseminated that widely. But the good side is that lots of people, you know, I mean, I have to admit, my interest in this didn't start, you know, I didn't meet some mysterious emissary of a in secret society somewhere. I, you know, was buying these cheap paperback books on Aleister Crowley and ghosts and people like that. And they just became very excited. I mean, the book that got me going was a book called The Occult by Colin Wilson, who's this English writer. You know, he also wrote a book called The Outsider, which is probably his most well-known one. And he took you know, a rather serious approach to it. And he was interested in philosophy and existentialism and so on, and, you know, the quest for meaning and that approach, and that's the approach he took looking at, you know, variety forms of occultism, and that's what made it interesting for me. And then, so the reason I say that is that it's there, it's not hidden in the way that, say, it was 50 years ago, or maybe, you know, a century ago. And I don't know if, you know, there are any real secrets in the sense that, you know, something that if you travel to Tibet or wherever, you know, in some inner sanctum, you'll find something. But I don't know if you need that anymore. I think that's a very powerful metaphor, and it's a good way to sort of focus your concentration on these things. Because, you know, if you pursue them, and they're all available, you know, you can. And when I lived in Los Angeles, I lived in L.A. for a very long time, and I worked at a place called the Bodhi Tree Bookstore, which is this, you know, it's the
I've been there.
Most well-known metaphysical bookstore west of the Rockies, and you, yeah, it's a great place, and you can get anything you want. Yeah, so I mean, that's how I learned about a great deal of this, is that it was so available. But yeah, I think you could probably find groups that, you know, try to, because there's a certain, you do generate a certain energy when you kind of keep things constrained and you know, concentrated. You can develop. I mean, I think in many ways, a lot of the rules of some groups, they're designed to do precisely that, to create this kind of, I mean, Jung himself, one of the themes he talks about in his own life was the importance of having a secret. You have something that's secret that you don't communicate to other people, and it's yours, and that focuses, that crystallizes your, that helps to focus and crystallize your sense of self. Because it's something that is entirely you, or it's entirely yours. And yeah, I think that same sensibility informs the. Again, it goes back to this whole idea of the mysteries, the Greek mysteries, where on pain of death you were initiated into them, but you could not communicate what the mystery was to others. And again, Freemasonry with the whole its whole initiatory aspect. I mean, this was the power of Freemasonry, that, you know, people who joined it went through this initiation. And whether today perhaps it's a less intense experience, at the time that I'm writing about it in the book, in the late 1700s, around the time of the American Revolution and later the French Revolution, you know, they went through quite remarkable experiences, you know, symbolic experiences through this ritual of death and rebirth and confrontation with evil and so on and so on, and you came out a changed person. I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, while it's good to have this material widely distributed and available to everybody, there's a certain virtue also in having it, you know, trying to maintain a kind of concentrated version of it. But that's all I can tell you about it. If I say any more, I'll be revealing the secrets.
It would be the secret, and you have to be initiated.
I'd have to, and I can't. I promised them I wouldn't, so.
So you said that you're working on a new book?
Yeah, I'm working on a book on C.G. Jung from the perspective of Jung the mystic. Was he, you know, could you consider Jung a mystic, or is that a good thing to be? Or, I mean, many people use it as a term of criticism, you know, that he wasn't scientific and so on and so on. So I'll be exploring those ideas.
Real quick, where can people get copies of your book?
Any good bookstore, basically Amazon is the best, easiest place, I guess, these days, sadly. But, yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay, great.
All right, cheers. And take care now.
And
okay,
next
bye-bye.
Week, we'll be having Guy Finley on talking about the art of letting go.
Yeah.
And so, till next week, I'm Dr. Rita Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. Thank you all for tuning in, and be blessed.
Join host Dr. Rita Louise each week at this time for Just Energy Radio. Point your browser to www.justenergyradio.com for more show information and to contact Dr. Rita. Until next time, remember, it's all just energy.